Welcome back, folks, to the Humble Coach Podcast. My name is Park, and we're back with episode number 56. And I have the great pleasure today to be joined by a lady called Ger McTavish. Ger, thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much, Park.
No problem. So I did a big, mad, lovely intro yesterday, and we had to kind of cut things short. So I will add that back in because I think it's appropriate for Ger. She has a vast knowledge of coaching and development of athletes and of people. So I think this is going to be a really, really interesting chat. So Ger, to kind of get it started, could you talk a little bit about your background and how you got into coaching? And I suppose what kind of triggered you to get into coaching when you got started on it?
Yeah, thanks, Park. It's a pleasure to be on. I suppose my background, I'm originally from Carna in Connemara, a little village on the west coast of Ireland. I suppose from that, I'm the youngest of 14 children. So there is 6 boys and there's 8 girls. So my mother was a huge advocate for everything Irish. So from Irish dancing to Irish music to drama, we were involved in from a very young age. And then my father was hugely involved in the GAA club, Carna Cashel. And all of us, I suppose more so the boys, were hugely involved in the sport. And then the girls joined, I suppose, through school, through community games, through any kind of sport we could get involved in. We were pretty much, so I think it was mainly our parents keeping us fit and healthy. I think our front room was converted into an Irish dancing class every evening, and then our sitting room was converted into a sports ground. So from playing rugby to you name it, we had different sport. Like, I suppose every one of us are unique, so family, so everyone had a different interest, if it was running, athletics, or if it was basketball or rugby. So I think I was immersed in so much different sports and culture as I was growing up. So I think that's first of all where the love came. The Olympics, I suppose, when you in our house, sport was always on the TV as well. So I remember the first time ever watching the Olympics and going, that's absolutely amazing. So I think through the school years, primary school and secondary school, in Carna, that love for sport came through. Like, I loved education. I'm a self-directed learner, so I love education. So I did enjoy being in school. And through the schooling, I did basketball, football, athletics, whatever sport I was allowed to do, I did. So I think probably it stemmed from the family and then just the love of the sport.
Mm, nice. So that's actually, like, a lot of that resonates with me because I'm one of 11 children. So I'm not necessarily the 14, but I do have 7 sisters. With awareness of it. And like that, there was constant sport. Like, we nearly can say in our family that there's nearly 2 families. It's like a younger and an older family. And kind of cuts off at around 5 or 6 of us, and then there's the other crowd. So there's nearly like a sporty kind of crowd. Or like, in the 2 families, the 2 halves, there's like an arty and a sporty, and an arty and a sporty as well at both ends. So it's kind of fun like that. But talking about the Olympics and the Irish dancing, like, I distinctly remember my sisters and myself and my brothers getting involved in Irish dancing and feshes and the whole lot back in the day. So yeah, I can resonate quite well with that.
Yeah, and also being the youngest, I was probably a bit more competitive than all the rest because I had to do a lot of catching up. So my mother would tell me stories about me being so competitive and always, I suppose, I asked questions and I was more observant and I watched everything. I suppose being the youngest, you do. So I learned very quickly, so I adapted very quickly. So if I seen people making mistakes, I would try to correct it in what I was doing. So I would have been very, very, very much so observant and correcting, and I think that's part of Irish dancing. But like, I've sisters who have told me, like, they have All Ireland medals to kind of championships to It was a huge accolade, and my mother used to keep them all up on the wall, used to put all the medals and all the, I think if we could have started up our own shop at one stage of all the medals and trophies from all every one of us. So
I'm aware of that because I know one of my sisters, my eldest sister, she was like really good when she was younger, like maybe 10 to 14, 15 or so odd. Like she was a badass. She was really like, I when I think back now, it's so mad to see all of those things. And it was replaced after a while with myself and my brother's boxing trophies and all this kind of other crack. And it just got mad. So now it's just full of photos and stuff. It's really good. It's interesting like that. So did you ever get into, I suppose, like with such interest in sport and a varied sport and things like dancing, so a nice mesh of the creativity of the arts as well as the culture and the sport, was there, did you get into coaching in that kind of a double-edged kind of way, or was it primarily just from the interest level of really trying to understand different sports that got you into it?
Yeah, I think probably on two levels. One level is that I was always put into leader positions or from being captain of the teams, or like when I was with Carna Cashel and I, myself and my sister Teresa, we would have been picked to go play for Galway at senior level. And we played for Galway for probably about 2 or 3 years. As midfielders, both of us were midfielders, so we went to play for Galway. But we also then, I suppose, from those roles, you kind of have to lead. You're kind of controlling the game. And there was a lot of that tactical, and what we learned from actually playing the game, we brought into like when we were coaching or when we were doing anything. So I think that led its way. When Carna Cashel team finished off, I went to play with another team called the Grainne Wales, and I ended up being captain of that team for 7 years. So I think people instilled in me the belief that I had different qualities in motivating people, connecting with people, and then also the observing way I do things, or even just sometimes manners and how you deal with people and deal with them respectfully. And I was never there to critique people. It was more, what can I do to help them improve? So I learned that very early on. And as a coach, I think through different roles, like from job roles to just coaching my own daughter to coaching friends, I think through various jobs I've had, I've always been coaching in different aspects of coaching, I suppose, even in my work life as well. So I think various jobs and all the self-directed training courses I've done it all comes back to your belief in yourself and your observations and your own personal skills and how can you continue to improve them. So I think motivation of people, I found that was one of my strengths. So I think that's why the coaching came very easy.
Mm. Can you give us, I'm sure we all have different kind of times, and I mentioned one yesterday before we got cut off about my kind of like nearly the light switch that kind of pushed us on a bit further. And there's a lot more we could talk about. Was there anything in particular or any particular time where you kind of, I suppose, like another mentor or another person kind of went, okay, look, do you know what, put you in there, and that really fueled the whole belief? Was it one of the managers or something like that going, okay, we're going to make you a captain now and let's rock? Or was there a particular even game where you went, geez, I'm actually not too bad at this now. I kind of have a bit of an idea here.
I think as you get older, with age, it comes your understanding of your own character. So I suppose in my 20s, I was still trying to find myself. So into my 30s keep going, as I said, that's where you kind of find your strengths. I think when I returned to college as a mature student and did my sports science degree, I was so educated. I wanted to know everything about the science behind it. I didn't get an opportunity when I was younger, so I wanted to know everything I could know about sports. So I went to do the sports science and health degree in IT Tala. And there was, I would say, in that year alone, from some of the students to some of the lecturers and some of the most amazing coaches I've been privileged to be mentored by, like the likes of Barry Solon or Mike Boyles. So a lot of what I found is that it gave me ambition. Ambition was there, but it gave me even more ambition to be the best coach I could. So I had to learn from the best. So I actually started asking every question, tried to get to coaching courses, conferences. And I think through that, all of the coaches have given me some kind of a nugget or given me some kind of inspiration. And I've taken something from all of them. But I think the easiest way, how I suppose I kind of got support, it was four difficult years because I was working as well. So, and juggling a family as well. So, and moved to Dublin. So it was an amazing 4 years of my life, and it has spurred me on to be more ambitious and actually to ask the questions of really good coaches who I admire or I like the way they do things. And I continue to, I think the last time I met Jim Gavin in Round Towers, the club I played for in Dublin, everybody else was telling him to celebrate and everything, and I cornered him up at one of the tables and started asking questions. How did you get the lads to do this? How did you? And I think it's picking those opportunities, but also finding the coach you do admire as well. You do need role models as well. So yeah, I think the sports science probably picked me into my ambition coming back out and just that confidence to ask other coaches.
Nice. And I think that's a huge thing that I can definitely attest to as well, that when you have, there's definitely sometimes where you go through a phase where you're like, okay, my confidence might not be great, but it's similar to yourself. I was working in a gym and I was like in Galway, and it was full of kind of like Olympic athletes and really high level American college athletes and all this mad looking stuff. And then things change quite a bit and you kind of go, oh, this is a bit rougher. And then you come back to it and you have certain times. I remember distinctly one where, similar to yourself, possibly, I was doing one of the soccer coaching courses, and Noel O'Reilly was on it as one of the tutors. Brian Kerr's old assistant. And I remember distinctly then, like from day one of that to day two, playing five-a-side at the back with him was just mad. You're kind of like, this is crazy stuff. So when you get to meet those people, yeah, like you kind of, you definitely have to pick their mind and really, really get at it. Like, yeah. It's amazing stuff.
Probably that's one of the things I've been exposed to very good coaches from a young age. Like, as I said, the two sports in Connemara was either, in Carna was either you played Gaelic football, Irish dancing, but also you boxed. So like a lot of my family are immersed in the boxing, and I was very fortunate to know Coleman Flaherty. He's a good friend of the family, and he, I suppose, would have given me opportunities to learn from down in UL and athletics to in Dublin to Billy Walsh in the National Stadium to, I suppose, it's strange in a way that when I moved to Dublin, my first job was with Dublin GAA. I'd done some research studies with them through my third year and fourth year while I was in my sports science. They offered me a role and I said, I can't do both. And they said, well, we'll help you manage. We really want you on board, so we'll help you manage your fourth year and your work. So other people can show the belief they have in you, because sometimes you need to see what other people see. And I think it takes a long time as a coach to see that. But you do instill, sometimes you need to instill it in yourself, not just instill it in the people around you, the people you want to make better. You have to make yourself better. But I found going from the GAA, then some amazing coaches, and now who are, I suppose, we're on their pathway as well as coaches. The boxing, when I went in as club development manager in the boxing, I suppose the likes of Bernard Dunn to Zara Antia, like I got to be around them. I got to build friendships with them. And then ask lots of questions of their tactics and techniques and just observe them. And some of the times it's building that friendship that, and I remember John Conlon saying it to me a long time ago at a training course up in Belfast, if you want to learn, you just ask the questions. And sometimes listening is and looking with your eyes instead of talking all the time, I think is a good tool for any coach.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree. I think so this now kind of brings me on to a little bit of a different type of a question nearly. So at the moment, you're the GAA Diversity and Inclusion Officer with Croke Park, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really interesting role, obviously a vital role. And that's only came on in the last couple of years, though, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, so I suppose before I left Carna, I was a special needs assistant in the school there of Republic Dara. So I would have trained as a special needs assistant and I would have taken care of some children in the secondary school. I loved that role and I'm still very close to a lot of people from the school. But what I found was from that is that I'll give you a simple example or a simple story is that there was a beautiful girl called Katie that I used to take care of. And Katie had a prosthesis leg and no arms. And we used to go into the PE class and she would look at me and go, what do we do? Most of the time she used to just sit on the bench and not get involved in PE. So I suggested to her that I had an idea. So I got three yoga mats and we went into the dressing room. And we used to do yoga. So it was adapting. Anybody can do sport, anybody can keep fit, anybody can train their body, but it was adapting what she's seen as PE for her. So I suppose that opened up a whole world to me, the children I took care of, because you went from, I suppose, children with disabilities to children with severe learning disabilities and then communication problems. To being blind or deaf. So as an outdoor education instructor, I trained when I was 18. I actually used to train deaf children at Windsurf. So a lot of the things that I had done through my life, I suppose, that helped me then to cope as a special needs assistant in my job. So when I came to Dublin, I'd gone back and done sports science and after I worked with the GAA, I went to the boxing for 2 years as club development manager. And 2 years after that, I went to Special Olympics Ireland as a club development manager. So I think that was one of the key roles I always wanted to. I always wanted to work for Special Olympics after being a special needs assistant. And I learned better communication skills, how to adapt sport, how to build a program from scratch for a child with intellectual disability to a child who just had an impairment to a child who was suffering with communication problems. So, from sign language to all the different things that you need to have in your back pocket for coaching. So that whole development, I've always been in development, I suppose, from youth work days to in Special Olympics. So it became the norm to just for me, someone to say, sure, I need you to do a program for someone who's blind. Can you do a program for me? I need you to do a program for somebody who's got a severe disability. And I think through Special Olympics has 17 different sports. So I would say it was challenging, but at the same time, I learned in 2 years, I learned as much from people who have the experience, who've probably been involved in Special Olympics for the last 20 years. So I learned from a lot of those and a lot of coaches and I admire them because they do amazing work. And then the opportunity came up to go to back to the GAA. I suppose that's the dream job. I do remember telling my lecturer in IT Pala over 9 years ago, actually 8 years ago, he said to me, he said, Dur, what would you like to do when you finish here, when you finish your 4 years? And I said, well, I'd hopefully try to adapt and change things in sport in Ireland and change for the better, I said. And especially for my daughter, I wanted things to be different for her. And he turned around, he said, you know, you have to do that from the top here. It doesn't, you can't do it from the bottom. And I remember ringing him back and telling him that I'm now at the top. So I'll help develop and change things. Takes a while.
Yeah, well, that's huge, because it does take a while. And I think a lot of people, and this is where, this is an interesting one off of that. So the, I suppose we spoke about different roundtables and groups that we may be involved in and during this kind of challenging time. And a lot of people are very, a lot of coaches, I think, look at the highest end and high performance and very high profile players or teams as the pinnacle of coaching. And you can attest to it, and I can attest to it as well, having worked with disadvantaged children or having worked with disadvantaged people or challenging groups, and those are the most important times, I think, coaching wise. They're the times that I've learned the most. Like, I haven't learned from high performance teams, but by and large, it's been from more challenging, straightforward or not straightforward circumstances that I've learned from. I think that's one of the key ones that I've noticed more and more as I get older, as I get more experience as a coach. And the great Dan John says that there's nothing new under the sun. So you can never, like, there's nothing more complicated. Like, a squat is a squat, a run is a run, like all of this kind of stuff. So having the ability to break it back to whatever is appropriate. Like, for example, with that girl that you were working with when you were doing yoga, when was that?
That was, God, that's about 12, 13 years ago.
So, maybe more. Yeah, so that's mad, because now, like, nowadays, and I'm sure it was very much predominant in a lot of circles at the time, but more so now, that would be much more acceptable and much more common. But at the time, you would have had to be quite creative in looking at that and being quite brave and going, okay, this is what is appropriate for this person, rather than deciding, okay, I should actually stick with the kind of such and such and, you know what, like, okay, we can't do anything about it and da da da. Whereas you took it upon yourself to go, okay, yeah, we did actually get something done, and we were able to impact on those people. I think looking at the likes of the GA for All or the Fun Run or the Wheelchair Camogie and Hurling that you're involved in, like, and promoting, all of that stuff makes such a huge difference, because that adds an awful lot more richness to the community that we're all working in, whether it's GA or whether it's boxing or whether it's any kind of sport. But I think we have a huge duty as coaches to do that. Because if we just focus on the top end stuff is great. It's really interesting to look at, but it's just as important to have those particular skills for everybody and anybody. And especially the most vulnerable, I think that we kind of work with. That's a huge one.
That's one of the things, Cork, I think, as a coach, we're always trying to help and improve people. And the high performance, I suppose, I got to live and breathe in the high performance unit. I trained as an anti-doping officer with Sport Ireland. That was a tutor many years ago. I suppose a lot of my pathways has always been, I wanted to improve myself. I want to learn more. I want to engage more. I wanted to learn from the best so I could be the best in whatever avenue, but I wanted to know everything. And it's hard some of the times to keep your focus on, do you stay with strength and conditioning? Do you stay with club development? Do you stay with program development? Do you go to coach teams, or do you? And I suppose I've been very fortunate. And to be honest with you, Borg, I would put it down to the person who I am, the role models I've had, some of the mentors and my family, that I have been lucky enough to be in the right places at the right time, met the right people. But I think the core thing to me is that I've always respected people. I've always kept my networks. I've always kept my friendships. And I continue to do that. Like, you're a friend first before you're my colleague or my coach, or and communication. as I said, I could have a huge disagreement with any of the coaches, but thrash it out, talk about it, and then come back to like what we're here to do. And I think if you can make someone's life better, like me teaching Katie how to do yoga, to a lot of the children with the intellectual disability that we've worked with do wheelchair hurling, there is a fear there of going into help people with an impairment or disability. And there is a fear because as a coach, you're not sure if you know what to do and what's right. But if you treat that child or adult or person the exact same way that you would treat yourself or your brothers or your sisters, you'll find a way. And that's the one thing I've been trying to teach coaches in the GA for All and in the Wheelchair Hurling Camogie, is that you don't have to have all the answers. The children can give you answers. You will figure it out. We've always figured it out. When you've gone into a session and something didn't work, you were flexible and you've changed it, you've adapted it. If one of your players got injured and they couldn't train, you've adapted their training session. If someone ends up breaking a leg or hand or whatever, some huge incident like concussion, you adapt for that specific individual. So I would have learned all of that through, I suppose, a lot of the different coaches and mentors. But I just find that me personally, if I can help someone have a better day, a fun day, fun has to be in it as well, because you have to love it. You really have to love it, and you have to make it fun to stick with it, I suppose. And I love what I do. I love the diversity and inclusion. We're the only sporting organization in the world that has a diversity and inclusion officer. I actually know that from, I was on a sports marketing conference last week, and one of the Dutch coaches said, "Jerry, you do know you're the only diversity and inclusion officer in a sporting organization." And I went, "Okay, thanks. Good to know." But as I said, most of my work is to do with inclusion, but it's diversity is dealing with the uniqueness of you. So, or I'd coach you different than I would coach someone else. So diversity is about your uniqueness, not about different races or colors or anything like that. It's about your individual person. So as a coach, I always knew I had to do a program plan, a strength conditioning coach, individually for every person. I couldn't give the same thing to the whole team. So I think that's where diversity comes in. And then the inclusion part is a choice. You have a choice to either include me in your programs or not. And that's a personal choice to everyone. So I think, and a lot of the work I do now as well is multicultural. So I'm dealing with a lot of different, I suppose, nationalities who've come to Ireland. And because I love my own culture and I love what we represent, even from the GAA to the Irish language, the music, I'm probably the gift I have is that I'm a fluent Irish speaker and I'm able to transfer it from English to Irish. So I have a really good sense of my own identity as an Irish person. So it's easier to understand a different culture and I suppose be open-minded and be unbiased to their culture and seeing where we connect. And I think sometimes it's about voicing that to other people, is that you can coach anyone if you treat them the way you want to be treated.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. Like, to be fair, there's a huge number of pieces there have resonated with me, but I think one of the biggest things you mentioned there was there's absolute value in being aware of exactly what high performance requires. And having seen it and been involved in a little bit myself in parts, not necessarily maybe as at the same level as yours, but definitely having been aware of it and in amongst it a little bit, there definitely is huge, huge learnings from it. And they're vital learnings because they do give you the actual confidence, first of all, to go, okay, well, you know what? I can actually put things like this into place for everybody. But when you see it at the top level that everything is individualized or at the best quality is individualized, then it gives you great confidence and great encouragement to go, okay, you know what? This is non-negotiable for everybody. There needs to be that individualization. And especially when it comes to people of different nationalities or people of different different cultures, when they're just as likely to be nervous and conscious of interaction with you as you are of them. And that's, I suppose, with the likes of the boxing, for example, or with the GAA, and those being so multicultural nowadays, and over the years, I suppose, even with the traveling community or different countries and stuff like that, it's a huge, huge thing. So being able to meet people where they're at and going, okay, well, what do you need right now? Takes a huge amount of work, but it's the only work that really is important. You know, yeah. Regardless of what level you're at, it's the only way to go.
And the other thing is, Pádraig, is and I remember saying this to a couple of people that I have worked with during the year. Some people you get on with, Pádraig, and some people you just don't. And I think that's human nature. Like, as I could be your best coach, and I could get you to the high performance, and I could get you to a level. And I suppose I've been coached by so many people over the career of football and different sports that I loved some coaches. I hated other coaches. I hated, you know what I mean? Not hate, but actually they pushed me past my level, or they didn't communicate the way I suppose I wanted it, or I didn't reach the level I wanted to reach with them. So sometimes you do pick a coach based on the high performance, but you don't connect with them. And I think that connection to your coach as well, if you don't connect, well, then you definitely need to go to another coach, because we're all individual in that sense. And some coaches are looking for you to be powerful. Some are looking for you to be as fast as possible. Others are looking for you to... And I suppose I would have seen that. I would have been development officer for volunteered as a development officer for the LGFA in Dublin for a couple of years. And when I did that, I then got thrown into being assistant coach with the under 14, 16 and minor team for Dublin. And a lot of the work that I did with the teams was more about sleep patterns, nutrition, what they're eating, explaining things that the nutrition would affect their moods as well as affect their training. So that kind of psychonutrition side of things. And then also would have spoke to them about belief and resilience and what they needed to learn, because at county level, you win and you lose very quickly. And this could, under 14s, a young girl, you know, they're going through a huge transition as it is. So it was trying to reteach. So a lot of the times you're teaching as a coach. So I suppose that's what I found, is seeing through the teams, the head manager, the head coach wanted totally different things from the girls than what I was giving them at different stages. And he'd tell me, well, I want her to be faster. She needs to be, you know, a hand-eye coordination. I need no injuries. Most of my time was prevent injuries, keep them away from the bench, as in prevent injuries. So I suppose I would have learned a lot, but I also found from working under three different managers that each one of them wanted something completely different. From teams. So I think it's sometimes you follow people that you want to be more like, or you're more I suppose admire coaches that you want to have a similar personality to as well. So as I said, I've just been very fortunate to see all of that and where I am now in my coaching career.
I agree. I think that you said something there just towards the back end, that's exactly what we want, I think, as coaches, is we could talk a lot about values and the importance of having your own kind of mission and core values and stuff, but the coaches and people you want to learn from, you're going to need to learn from people who have, I suppose, I'm reading a couple of books at the moment, and one book in particular isn't really the coaching voice that I'm kind of mad enjoying, whereas the other book I'm like, oh, this is actually just flying into my head, like it's not an issue. So it definitely feels a bit different to have a different coaching voice. Like I said about the likes of Noel O'Reilly, for example, like it, no matter what, it felt like it felt so inclusive immediately, but it also felt like there was huge empowerment and huge just comfort with like, no, this is what we do. We're just empowering. Off we go. It's just mad. And I think that's where having that kind of an element to empowerment, especially even in at the moment, is a huge one. Like you mentioned a couple of things now about, we talk about the athletes, for example, that would be having some challenging times right now, and how we could approach coaching them and working along with them. And I find with my coaching job, I was primarily an in-person coaching coach as such, not necessarily massively online, but it was very much on the ground, kind of working tactile cues and working with people on a very detailed level, or in that kind of context, at least quite a technical level. That's completely flipped, and now it's much more of a mental game than anything else. Like the reps and sets are very, very much relative at this point. Like, you know what I mean? It's not really a deal breaker. Like, I could give you fucking a million reps, and like it would all be relative because you might not get half of the fucking things done. Like, you know.
That's exactly, Pork. I mentioned yesterday. I suppose when I did the sports science and health degree, and I was very fortunate to have Barry Zolan from Arsenal, Des Ryan, a lot of really good coaches, Leo Cullen, to Joe Schmidt, to a lot of people come in, and I would have taken every opportunity to listen to them and to get knowledge from them and ask them questions. And I remember asking at the table one of the days to a lot of the students, I suppose a lot of my class, have now gone on to be strength and conditioning coaches, and I remember going, what am I going to do? Because Leo Cullen had come in and he talked about where you're going to go in the future. And I remember one of my lecturers saying, Geraldine, you can be the next strength and conditioning coach, first female strength and conditioning coach, and you can be in the high performance. And I remember going, is that something that I want to do? And I remembered, like, I had done so much of strength and conditioning, and I'd done 4 years of it, that I knew how to do it, but was my love in it? I wasn't 100%. So like that, went to the Mike Boyles, did a lot of the research, read every book I could, and we had a lot of forums, and there was a lot of development happening in Ireland at the time. So there was a lot of really, really core strength and conditioning, and I don't think it was the path for me, because I actually got asked to do something else, which was coaching teams. And once I went into the team environment, I actually found that more on the motivation and maybe the psychology side of things, that I had more of an influence. I suppose I could do a lot of the, and it was more the behavioral and the attitudes and the whole structure of creating a team environment, that I became learning those skills. And yes, I could do the strength and conditioning very easy and do out of program. Did I want to sit down and do that all the time individually and in a gym? And I grew up not in a gym. Like, we ran the hills, the mountains, the roads. The gym wasn't something that attracted me. So I think that's why I never went down the strength and conditioning. But what I did is I converted that to the pitch. So I used strength and conditioning as much as I could on a GAA pitch, doing tumbles to wheelbar runs to lifting, that kind of stuff. So it was all body weight stuff. So I think that's where I used the knowledge I got in strength and conditioning, but transferred it onto the pitch. And I think that's what I love doing, coming up with different ways of doing that, more so than being enclosed inside a gym. And your gym can be outside now as well, and different things. So it was about, I suppose, even back then, I was adapting what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I think that's actually one of the biggest things that this current time has given us back. It's given us the reality of, okay, do you really, like, the main machine you have is your body. So your body and your mind, and you have no choice but to try and work on those a little bit. Now, it's literally like having an amazing car, and you're like, okay, well, I'm not going to really keep it in great nick. And you're like, well, why would you have a really amazing car if you're not going to keep it in great nick? Like, you know. But I think the problem is, if you don't have the car for the right reasons, and you don't have your mental game in the correct place, you're not doing it for a particular reason. Like, a lot of the time it's for other people's approval. And I think a huge amount of it has to come back to our own approval of what we're valuable for, what we want to value in other people, what we want to value in our sports. And I think that's one thing I've a huge piece that I've ran into over the last number of months, is when you're involved with a team or you're involved with certain people who are going through quite considerable challenges, having the wherewithal to kind of go, okay, do you know what, we're going to bring it back to complete brass tacks and very basic stuff, and we'll rebuild with a stronger foundation than was there originally, let's put it that way. And it takes time to get used to that, but I think that's an important one at this point, that the foundational stuff is vital. Like obviously with certain teams and things like that and sports coming back to play quickly enough, maybe in the next couple of months or something like that, there's a good conversation around return to play protocols and how much training you might need and how much preparation and so on. But I don't know. I think a lot of it is going to come back towards the mental aspect of, okay, are you able to come back into an environment? Go on.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I found. So where I sit is the community and health team in Pro Park. And community and health team for many years has been all about different types of addiction to different types of mental health and mental health well-being. So a lot of the work I would have done even in the sports science was about resilience and self-care and just visualization and how to see yourself. And I suppose those 4 years was probably the confidence builder I needed as a coach to know what my skills were. And then it was, how do you empower other people? So you can say to someone, you need to work more on your mental health, but they don't know what the mental health is. So you have to, like you break down your strength and conditioning program, you break down what areas people need to work on. So sometimes it is just their attitude, sometimes it's their behavior, and sometimes as well as that, it's how they look at themselves. And until they see their own strengths and their own weaknesses and start working with their strengths and progressing, because if you focus on a person's weakness all the time, they'll continue, you're knocking their confidence. So you're actually taking away that's what's good. So a lot of the work that I would do in the mental health side of things, and I actually still volunteer in Dublin Health and Wellbeing Committee, we try as much as possible to build up people by looking at their strengths and asking them to, that's what you're good at. And that's what you need to keep doing really, really well. If you have weaknesses, I suppose it's different in the gym. People have weaknesses, you do extra reps to make sure you kind of, but when it's to do with your mind, you have to retrain your mind. So you actually have to stop negative thoughts coming in. So trying to explain to someone that as soon as you think there's a negative thought coming into your mind about yourself, you stop it. You go for a walk, you know what I mean? You think of something else, you distract yourself. So it is looking at mental strength as well. And it is about training the mind to think differently. And there's lots of tools. There's lots of tools out there for you to start working more. And it is about meditation, a lot of, to do with your food. So that book on psychonutrition, where it talks about your mood and food can affect your mood. So be conscious of what food can affect your mood as well and your mental health. Water is a huge thing that we don't realize that we need for absolutely everything. And we all should be drinking more and more water, but good quality water as athletes as well. And the last thing then is, there is that thing of constantly being flexible, having your body in a really good state where flexibility or mobility is always there. Because if there's no mobility, that's when usually an injury occurs. You've either a rotation in your joints or your hips. Like the core, as I always said, and maybe this is why I did yoga for Katie, even though she didn't have certain limbs, her core needed to be strong. So most of our energy and most of our thinking, everything comes from the core. So if you have a strong core, you keep an eye on your food, you drink plenty of water, that whole digestive system, that whole core is beneficial also to your mind. So I think that's what we try to work on is practice your own meditation and techniques, train your mind to stop negative thoughts when they come in there about you, even using negative words about yourself, because we are our worst critic. So if we can train ourselves to think positively about who we are, you see mental health and you see resilience and you see that confidence coming through.
I think that's exactly it. I think that's where a lot of people obviously at the moment are feeling quite lost. There was a point there for a few weeks where everyone was like, oh my God, what's going on? And there's such a lack of awareness of what will happen and what won't. And everybody has this underlying dodgy sleeping patterns and like, oh, okay, I'll do a bit more Netflix and I'll find whatever. And I think especially when you take, like you said, you take an addiction, and this is all, like, sport is all of our addictions, you know, progression is, yes, is all of our addictions, especially as coaches, we're very hardwired for that. But I think that's one of the key ones is if you are going through, and I've definitely gone through some difficult times, you no doubt yourself the same, but the only way we've got out of those difficult times is by tooling up correctly with the appropriate stuff for us. It's not just a case of like throwing the kitchen sink at it and going, okay, well, I have to get into this and this and counseling and all this, and like, no, well, hold on, you just need to flip and eat some decent food, like, and get some fucking sleep, like, in the odd time, or like, you know what, get out for a bit of a walk, don't have headphones, don't think you have to be constantly upskilling and constantly hammering yourself on that, because that's just feeding more and more of a challenge to yourself and maybe putting a bit more of a difficulty at yourself. And this is where I suppose when it comes to a simple example, the team that I work with at the moment, a Camogie team, and I put a question out to them recently about three things they need to work on, three skills they could get better at. And like some great stuff came back. I was like, oh, this is really interesting. This is good. And a lot of them came back to endurance. And I was like, when I started working with them at the start of the year, I looked at them and went, okay, these girls may not be savvy in the gym scenario. They might be okay. Like there's a couple of dodgy bits going on here and there. And then within the gym, like there's a large gym that I work in, and it's like a good 20 by kind of 15 meters space. So we kind of let them play some five-a-side kind of eight-a-side games, just a bit of madness. And their skill levels are ridiculous. And they all said, they were like, I need more endurance. And I'm like, lads, you don't need more endurance. You just need to play your actual game, like, and have a bit of confidence. You'll be unbelievable if you do. Like, and I think it's just kind of, like you said, it's going to be a case of finding out what's appropriate for each individual person. I had a couple of conversations last week from very high to very low, like somebody's flying it and somebody else is at a really, really low ebb. And it makes a huge difference when there's a tooling up of the appropriate things for you. Like for me, I need podcasting and I need coaching and I need talking to people because I'm so used to that. I'm just so used to talking to people and coaching people. Like I coach my mom every time she rings me. Even though she wouldn't listen to a flipping half stuff I'm talking about, you know what I mean? But I'm like, you have to do some deadlifts. And she's like, nah, I'm fine, thanks, don't panic, it's all good. And I'm like, look, it's important for you to do it, you know? But that, I think, is a huge piece because the more athletes at the moment, be it recreational athletes or they're seeing some of the professional athletes coming back and stuff like that, they can kind of get a bit wound up like, oh, I should be doing such and such. No, I think you should be taking care of what you need to take care of, whether it's your family, whether it's yourself, whether it's your own stability and your own confidence levels. Or it's a great opportunity to work on things, but it doesn't mean you have to work on all of that right now. I think there's a huge pressure sometimes to look at that.
And I think, Cork, what's coming across there for me is that we compare ourselves to people all the time, other people. We compare ourselves to other athletes. We see on Twitter, we see on Facebook, they're doing this, and they're hitting these reps, and they're hitting this, and they're getting these times. And the best way to say it, and I know it's a poem by Kevin McCourt, and it's actually doing the rounds, I think, on Facebook, but one of the things it says in that poem is that you shouldn't be comparing yourself to anyone, but what you should be doing is making sure you're better than you were yesterday. So I don't think if we stop looking at what everyone else is doing and actually focus on ourselves and then making ourselves better every day in whatever area we need to make ourselves better, we become a better athlete because we're competing against our yesterdays instead of competing against somebody else's record or somebody else's times or anything like that. And yes, competition makes you want to compete. And I probably be the one. If anybody beats me, it's amazing. It never leaves you. It really doesn't never leave you. You're always competing against something or somebody. And but I have found that competing against, when I see my body getting weak in different areas, it's getting back into the yoga, it's getting back into the running, it's getting back into the core exercises, it's going to the gym and doing some of the weights. And then at other times when, like, physically, I would have always been strength-wise. I suppose I was the endurance and the team. I would run all day, and I was tall and strong. So the power in my shoulders was always there. But as I'm getting older, I'm finding weaknesses are starting to come there. So I'd go in and I'd work on that. So if you know your own body, you actually start to see where the weaknesses. And it is about, as I said, your teenage years, you hated your body, your legs or your arms or whatever it was. You got into your 30s and you went, actually, I like who I am. You know what I mean? You become that person who you're actually glad to be in this body and you're glad to be who you are. And then it's about maintaining your fitness and health. And the way I see it is that if I'm exercising, I'm healthy. My mind is healthy. My body is healthy. If I'm meditating or if I'm doing yoga, same as I'm keeping my flexibility, I'm keeping my mobility, and then also as well the strength training, especially as you get older, keeping your muscle mass. And I suppose I probably, from Irish dancing, to my right and my left legs are have muscles from Irish dancing and from Gaelic football, and they're things, they define who you are. So I think getting to, I suppose, spend time on yourself and spend time, that actually helps you mentally as well, and actually appreciating what you have because other people don't have it. And I think if you start focusing always on your strengths, you actually stop comparing yourself to anyone else. And that's an amazing realization, but it's also so good for your mental health, is that your body is unique and it is a fabulous machine if you take care of it.
I think that's exactly it. It's essentially, if you're focusing on your strengths, you're essentially just adding more armor and you're just building stronger armor all the time. And that definitely can, it absolutely will stand to you in whatever your endeavor is, like, be it a particular sport or a particular activity or your family life. Like, you will have a better resilience, like you mentioned, and a better level of grit depending on what activity kicks in. Like, and I think times like this are kind of a bit odd because we're all a bit vulnerable and we're all a bit like, oh, well, I thought I was amazing. And like, nobody's really untouchable here, I'm afraid. and even if they can say all the kids they want, but I'm like, I'm not completely convinced just yet. So I'm like, that's fine. But it does take time. I think that's one thing that you mentioned as well. It's not necessarily just the athletes that are under pressure now. So us as coaches, and especially, I'm sure you're dealing with a huge amount, whether they are community coaches or they are people who would have not necessarily be playing the game right now, but they are hugely involved in the game. So if you're like a treasurer of a club, you're such and such, like you're doing the bingo, whatever it is, like, or if you do something like that, you just see somebody working beside you, you know, when you go into the community center or whatever, it's a huge, huge thing that kind of stuff can be missed at the moment. So it's, and an awful lot of people have never had this opportunity to work on themselves. They've never had it.
And that's what I would say as well, is that working on yourself is a huge benefit, but also as well as that, to be able to look at, relearn and relearn some skills that you probably haven't had time, because we've been going at 150 miles an hour for the last 10 years, 15 years since the last recession. So I think even staying fit and staying healthy yourself personally, there is those things of green energy, blue energy, being next to water, being next to trees and grass and wildlife. And I do think as well, what I've found is that being able to continue my exercises is probably the thing that's keeping your body and your mind kind of refreshed, but also the creativity. I have seen so much creativity in coaching that I've never seen, probably in the last 10 years, I haven't seen it, but the creativity from coaches online, from community coaches, from a lot of the games promotion officers that I was once at their role, I was in their role, and the creativity from them, from Zoom meetings to subscriptions to engagement. And I think as humans, we need that constant engagement. So I had a webinar last week on social inclusion for older adults, and it went out last Tuesday with Micheál Mar Hirtig and Professor Rosanna Kennedy from Trinity, and she does the longitude study on older people in Ireland. And she said, best poster boy is Micheál Mar Hirtig, and he went on RTE and did an exercise out in his back garden.
Oh, all right, yeah, exactly. But
everybody has started to do that, and that's what you need. You do need role models, people who will. So that's where I see the coaches. Coaches are being so creative and doing so many different things of how to engage. But one of the things Micheál Mar Hirtig said was, he said that for him to wake up every morning is a gift. Go out and breathe and take a deep breath and start a new day was a gift. And he says that in itself should be enough to keep you going for the day, that you can actually still breathe and you're still getting up every day. And he also said is that if you ring Cork today, make sure to ring Dirt tomorrow, make sure to ring Thomas the next day, Teresa another day. So it was that of connect in, not with the same people, start ringing the people. So there's a huge amount of lists. And one of the tasks I gave to all of them was go back over their memories and take out every clipping they have of Newell's articles from the GAA, take out their pictures again, go back over their memories, connect with the people that they might not have connected with, their news clippings, their videos, their, and then when all of this is, and when we do get through, which we will get through in a couple of weeks, is go through every day, but have a project, have an end lane that you can go down to the club and you can go, this is what I've put together for the club, and I want the club to have this history or this legacy. So it was trying to give little, I suppose, advice, but also as well as that, keep people on track. It's day by day. It's not week by week or month by month. It was just giving those, it's for all of us, is that yes, we can work, yes, we can do things remotely, but we will get through this and we'll be stronger the other side, but we have to keep ourselves physically fit and mentally fit, which is going for your walk, whatever. But it's different for everyone, and there's so much online. I would be encouraging everyone to search for something that they love to do, or they've also neglected for the last 10 or 15 years. Like a good friend of mine has started to draw again, and she's fabulous. She goes, Dara, I haven't had the chance in 15 years.
Yeah.
Very simple.
Yeah, and I think I completely agree. Like a couple of things particularly resonated there. I suppose one of the main ones is even mentioning about the memories. And there's a point a few weeks ago where I spent 3 days just reminiscing, just like literally all I was doing was thinking about the fields near my uncle's house and such and such. Like, and my family has a WhatsApp group, and my dad sent a photo of him just standing in this nice long old road beside our house, and like, oh, things just flood back. It's just phenomenal. Like, and then even the way you talk, like we're talking about Coleman and stuff like that, it's certain memories just absolutely flood back. It's so mad.
But we also, as well, Cork, have to, and one of the things that I suppose a lot of us don't do very often is take a couple of minutes and be proud of where you are and what you've achieved and where you've gone. Like, I look back at 2020, and yes, it's probably this COVID has been, but like, as I said, I've got the job that I've always wanted to do. There's been a huge amount of nuggets in my life, from my family to different things, that have made me appreciate more. And that's probably what COVID's going to do for us all. But I think as well as that, what it will do is it'll make us stay healthier. Like the amount of people that are out walking, that are out cycling, that like we had gone to the stage, and I know the studies in DCU where obesity was on the increase. Yes, we're very much into our fitness and how we look and all of that, but definitely our physical fitness compared to when I was younger, it has completely declined. And it is about getting that back to to the children. And if you're fit and healthy, you can, sickness comes and goes. But if you're, if you don't have that health and that, I suppose, your body physically strong, you won't get through certain sicknesses. And I think that's where, if we can tell people, keep your mind healthy, keep your body healthy, and we can help, we can coach you through it. And so many people will be appreciative of that. And I think that as a coach, that's what I hope to continue to be able to do to a lot of my friends, as well as family and other people.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's one of the things that, kind of I thought about earlier on. As coaches, we essentially kind of like, if anybody has something they want to work on, they want to lose a bit of body fat, they want to get better at walking or marathons, or they want to get better at their sport, we're the buffer zone. So we give them some space to get rid of some of the mental energy, and they like kind of leave it to us, so that we take part of the mental energy, and then they can be their best amazing person or athlete or whatever it is, or they can show off that stuff. Yeah. But they need us to be that buffer, and we need to be really, really strong mentally as much as possible to do that. But we also have to be very conscientious that I think that we can be under huge pressure as well. And the confidence piece from us is huge to keep going, because if we don't maintain our own confidence levels, it's very difficult, as well as our own vulnerabilities. It's very difficult for the athlete or for the person then to resonate with us and understand. Like I said, the alignment of kind of values and the alignment of kind of personalities nearly with the appropriate coach. It's vitally important that we keep ourselves as coaches going. And I think, like you said, really remembering that we have a particular place that is vitally important, depending on, and it is relative to what's needed, but I think that can be a huge part for people to recognize, is as coaches, we have a huge opportunity to affect people's lives or to impact on people's lives. But also we can help, because we are coaches, we're in the matrix. We can already see what needs to be done, but we just need to allow ourselves a little bit of space as our own coach nearly before we actually force ourselves to do. Because a lot of times, like you said, we can beat ourselves up going off. I should be doing this, I should be doing this, and I should be getting this. And I'm like, well, I'm not really in the form for it today. So I'm like, I might just leave it.
You also as well, and that's one thing maybe age does as well, is that, and as a coach, is that, like, yes, you become the counselor, the coach, the friend, the network, the person. There is a program we have with the VA called One Good Coach. And as I said, it's that one good adult in people's lives. So people are expecting you to be on all the time. And that's why your support network, who are your mentors, who do you look up to, and who surrounds you, create that environment that you can vent, you can do whatever you can. And then also, as well as that, they're the ones who say, you're able to do this. You've done a lot more. You've got the skill set. You've got the character. You've been in tighter situations. So I think your support network is hugely important, but also who your mentors are, who your role models are. And I've been very fortunate to have some very, very, I suppose, high caliber coaches in different avenues, and then I go and I source them out as well, so I track them down as well and ask them questions. So that's one of the things that I delivered down, and I coach kids down in UL last year, and it was for Special Olympics, and I delivered the Young Athletes program that I helped develop, and it was international. It's coaches all over the world. And that in itself, the questions that came from the floor, the kitchen, and like, that was me completely outside my comfort zone. It was different nationalities, it was different. But I think the biggest fear I ever had as a coach was going to Poland and delivering in front of so many athletes with intellectual disability from different nationalities, and most of them, their first language wasn't English. So they had interpreters, so they had translators. So I would coach I'd have to leave some time, let the translator translate, and then go and coach again. And then, yes, it's great when it's communicated in English, but when you have to translate it into other languages, it's quite difficult. So I became very much a pitcher. So my hands were doing everything, my body was doing everything. So your body can actually be your tool as well when you're trying to coach. So one of my lecturers said to me a long time ago, your body is your selling point as well. So you have to be, if you want to coach people, they have to see a coach in front of them as well. So there's all those skills, the creative skills that we learn as a coach to be able to deliver. So you pull on everything that's in your mind, and when something doesn't work, you flip and you do something else. And like, I've been in situations like that in front of thousands of people, and it hasn't worked, and the information hasn't landed. So I've had to go back and before the end of a talk and adapt it. So information does land and they get it and they walk away with the information. So as a tutor, you have to know how everybody learns, and we all learn differently as well, from visual, from other, or writing. So there is the other avenues to learn for yourself, how other people learn, and you do that as a coach as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly it. I think on that point, I don't know whether I do it on purpose or not, but in all of my coaching, I'm getting more and more analogous than anything else. So all I use is analogies, like just ridiculous analogies. And I used one yesterday. I was talking to one of the guys who was in the gym before, and I was like helping him with some coaching, and like he's got a rock and he's got a tire and he's got this and this, and of course, three or four different analogies came up that I don't know. I wasn't even consciously thinking of the damn things. I was like, they just come up, and I'm like, oh, that's weird. I might even know that down. So, like you mentioned, having those analogies and having that, I think nearly kind of allowing ourselves to get swept up in it a little bit, makes a huge difference to it, because some of the best coaching I've ever done, I'm sure the same with yourself, has been when we've been lost in coaching.
Yeah,
we've been literally in the matrix, you know.
Yeah, and they're the nuggets. They're the things that you kind of go, okay, I've done that, and it's been really, really worthwhile to remember it and to use it then again. So that's the teacher coming out, is that you have to know as well, and this is how yourself in your own gym park you would have seen, is that you've become you know your clients, you know your athletes, you know your camogie team. You've spent that time getting to know them. You know the difference, who can handle what, who can, and that connection comes from spending time with the person and having respect for the person. And but also some of the times them coming back going, listen, Park, no, not today. You know?
Very much.
So it is that of being that open that a player can come to you and say, listen, Jer, I think I overdid it on that during the week. I don't think I can manage this today, and you just go, but also stepping back and letting them have that time, that because it's their control. Because that was one of the things, if I suppose in teams we need to get them to a certain level, to get them winning all the time, but sometimes it's about the development. Winning can be the product of development, but if you're just focusing on winning all the time, you don't do the development. So if you focus on development, then they might not have won anything, but they're your friend for life. They'll meet you other places. They'll see you on other occasions. You might come across them again in 5 years' time, and they're the athlete they want to be now because you influenced them when they were 10, you know? So I think that's like, everyone has an effect on someone else as well. So that's the physics coming out, and the sports sciences, where everything has an effect on something else. So be conscious of that as well.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think so. We'll change tack a little bit now. I won't keep you an awful lot longer, Jer. I know we've busy lives, and you're a blooming busy person, so you are, to be fair. So even if it's a Saturday, I'm sure you're still hectic enough. That's a serious job. Let's talk a little bit about with the GAA, obviously, and with your experience in lots of different sports as a coach and as a management oriented person as well, and a club developer, How important has and how difficult nearly has been your, I suppose, seeing the Irish culture and the Irish language and I suppose nearly the kind of the local, like, well, not necessarily that the local vibe has changed over the last number of years, but it's a different kind of a local vibe because there's such a new, such a variance in nationality and different types of people coming into the clubs and stuff. How have you found it? And have you seen any major differences in the adjustment of the Irish language and the inclusion of it and the Irish culture in general? Has that changed massively in the GAA, do you think, in recent years, or is it still there, but it's just a little different?
Yeah, so I suppose there's maybe two things to that question. First of all, the Irishness, as in the values that the GAA hold, which is sharing our culture and also sharing the pride that we have in our music, our dance, and Scorn an Óg is and Jamie O'Cuma is a close colleague, and he promotes that a huge amount to the Gaeilge. It's great because he sits across from me in my office, so we're able to contact Gaeilge to smooth on, so we can communicate. So it is, first of all, it is I suppose part of our values is that we share the Irishness of and be proud of that Irish and the music and dance and all of that. So that's probably one area that will always be part of the GAA because it's what we stand on and it's our identity. But the other side of it where I work a lot in is the diversity side of it. And that is where we have seen how society has changed in Ireland. And society has changed in the last 20 years. I suppose 30 years ago, even 40 years ago, we were a society of immigration. Now we're a society where people are coming to Ireland and staying in Ireland and making Ireland their home. They also love Ireland. So I suppose I was very fortunate. Six of my family, there's five in Boston and there's one in England. So I got to experience that from a really young age. They all emigrated. When I was growing up, I didn't get to see some of my older brothers and sisters until they came home back from Boston or came back from England. So I have experienced immigration with a name like McTavish. My great-grandfather was a soldier who came from Scotland. And we've seen a lot of immigration, I suppose, in my family. So I understand where other nationalities are coming from if they've come here as migrants, if they've come here as refugees, and if they've come here on their own will. And some have come here on scholarships because they're that intelligent and bright and wanted to make Ireland in their home because they love the culture. And I suppose that's one of the things to explain is that anyone who comes here looking for refugee status or migrant status, it's because they've, I suppose, suffered huge trauma in their own country or they will be killed. So to be able to go to a different land and start up another life for your family or for yourself is I suppose, a new world. So I think that's a couple of things that need to be considered. And I suppose the other side of that is human rights. And we signed up to the Human Rights Treaty many years ago. So that human right is entitled to what you're entitled to, I'm entitled to, and every other nationality is entitled to. And then we have the UN rights as well as the European rights. So it does come back down to basics. You are entitled to it, for it, so I'm entitled to it. So any other person coming into Ireland and who wants to set up the battery's about to die on my computer.
No, take your time. It's all good. No worries.
Sorry, Bart.
No, it's all good. No problem.
You could have blocked me. But yeah, sorry, to go back to that question. So a lot of the work I do with the different nationalities is we run workshops and we run seminars. So I'll give you an example. We launched just in March to do with Anti-Racism Month. We launched Responding to Racism. So it's a workshop pretty much for officials, members, executives, and members of clubs on how to respond to a racism issue if it happens in your club. And also, as well as that, it's not just race and discrimination as well. So many people from the LGBTQI community have been discriminated against. So we're working on a lot of different new policies for clubs. So at the moment, I'm working on a gender diversity policy. We have a gender diversity working group. So a lot of the areas that maybe once upon a time wasn't considered in sport has now been considered in sport, because everyone has seen that sport is a tool for creating peace and creating understanding and creating it's where everybody can join together and be just a sports person, not be a different nationality or not be. So yes, there will be bias, and yes, we've all experienced different I suppose environments from different nationalities and when we've traveled, but we can't paint the same picture for everybody who comes to Ireland. So I think sometimes there is negative I suppose images that we have from maybe young or from TV or even like from the news. That's not always the case, and I think I've always been a person who, I don't judge anybody by somebody else's opinion. I'll find out what that person is for myself, and then I make my own judgment. So I think judgments, if you make judgments of people, you'll find that a lot of those judgments can be, by having a conversation some of the times, a lot of those judgments are wrong, because we've seen it on TV or we've seen it. But that's your bias, more side coming out. So we are doing a lot of work. That's where I'm doing a lot of work at the moment. I do think, because I have a strong sense of who I am and what the Irish culture is, and I've been immersed in it since I was a child. So I think that helps me in the work that I do, that I'm able to communicate to people with, this is our culture, and we're proud of it. We don't want to change it, but what we want to do is be open to other cultures. So there's this difference. You can't change cultures. Cultures adapt, I suppose, to different society, but I've seen some amazing people do Irish dancing on Facebook, on different things to do, speaking Irish, different nationalities. And isn't it amazing to see that somebody loves Ireland so much that they take up Irish dancing and they speak the language? Isn't it amazing how much love they have for our own country? So I think that's what we need. Sometimes we need to look at the positive side of it. There's so much negativity out there all the time about different things that I try to look at the positive. Yes, we'll have issues. Yes, there'll be cultural differences. There's a language, first of all, barrier that can be quite difficult. But what I've said and suggested to GAA clubs is, if you have different people from different nationalities, go to the secondary school, ask them to convert all your information into a couple of different languages and then have it down in your club so they know who to go to. People only need one person to contact in a GAA club. And if you're in your GAA club and you're able to maybe encourage someone just needs to know you to then be taken into the GAA club. It's by our acquaintance that we end up going into the clubs and new clubs. It's the same if we wanted to do dance, it's the same if we want to do art, it's the same if we want to do music. So usually somebody introduces us to the sport. I was just lucky that my family were embraced in the GAA. I could have gone on rugby, I could have gone to other different sports, but we stayed with the GAA.
I think that's a huge, huge thing, though, as Jaron. There's a lot of fantastic points there, but that's the crux of it, I think, at the moment, is the GAA is evolving as an association, and as we as a country are evolving, and I think the our communities in general are evolving. Like, so they, like, as before, like, I remember when I was younger, anyways, and I'm sure you're the same, that the GAA pitch and the small little couple of dressing rooms was like, it was the Americana, like, it was crazy, you know, it was the most amazing place. And when, like, it was everybody congregated there, the community center was the absolute hub of the entire place. But now I think that's what it comes down to, is that is, it's the facilities and the location and the mentality of your particular club that guides exactly what level of accessibility you have and I suppose openness you have. And that's where putting yourself in a position as a club to allow that kind of stuff and to really embrace it, and especially when it comes from the likes of yourself, for example, being put in a particular position like this, to allow that and to really push it forwards, it gives great confidence, I think, to clubs to go, okay, well, we have backing from this, and this is the new world. This is what we need to embrace, because it's the reality that we're all facing day to day. That we do constantly see on the news people who may be under huge pressure, and they have to come to here. And what are we going to do? We're not going to stop them coming here. Like, we're not going to kind of go, oh, well, you're not allowed to come join my club because of such and such values. And that's BS. Like, you know, it's like, it's still the GA. Like, they're allowed to play football. Like, you know, they're allowed to do art. Like, you can do what you want. So, and I think that's where it goes back to the very basic crux of what the GA and sports especially is. I think that's one of the key ones. Like, we all feel it obviously a little bit lost with sport and stuff, but I didn't have as enjoyable of a moment, and it sounds a bit mad, as the Ireland-Romania game was on the telly the other day from the World Cup. Yeah. And I hadn't watched that since I was young. I hadn't watched since that age. So you don't watch something for 20, 25 years and you're like, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing. Like, and straight away my coaching brain went into it and I was like this and this and this, but I'm looking at the actual clothes and everything, and it's just, but then also, like you mentioned about the diversity in our clubs and in our social circles, it's huge, and it's huge that we consistently have that level of respect for people and patience with them. You, I think, are probably, I would say, in my estimation, you're, of anybody I've met recently, you're in the most right spot for you, I think. Because the main reason I say that is because I think you come across as a very, very calm kind of person. No, relatively serious, I mind, I think, but like good serious, like in a very organized way, you know, like an older sister kind of series kind of thing. And like, obviously the same as anything, if you're a busy person, you give you all the jobs to do and you get them all done still, like, so it's all relative. But having that I think conscientiousness and nearly kind of allowing yourself to fill yourself up with that confidence that, like, yeah, you have, I suppose it's really, you're very conscious of what's happened to you and able to use that in a good way going forward, in a positive way going forward. So all of the experiences that we've had, I think it's vital that we start using those, or we need to use them more to guide our next steps and how we can really help each other kind of get on with it all. Because a lot of the time that can be, I find people can get kind of wound up of like, oh, well, I don't have to talk about that part of my past or this part. And like, I don't really want to mention this name and so on. Like, I was going to ask, what are your, like, some of your names, some of your favorite coaches, but like the names that you've already dropped, like, I can't ask that question. You know what I mean? Because
I do have a few, like, I suppose there's a lot of different coaches, I suppose, that I would have done, I suppose, that I would have looked at. And I suppose it's through different sports, but also women as well. So, like, one of the, I suppose, ladies was in basketball, Pat Smith, and she was with the Tennessee in basketball, and she was some of the role models are men and female. So I think, like, you have to have across the board people that you aspire to as a woman, but also as well as that they aspire to, that you look out to, and that have achieved top kind of. But I think lots of people come in and out of your lives at different times for different reasons. So a lot of the coaches that I've mentioned have made lasting impressions on me in some way, through different skill sets of their own. And what I've learned from them is, this is how you communicate it, or this is how you speak to someone, or this is how you make someone enjoy your sessions and create fun and create enjoyment. But there's also that, I suppose, passion that's in the work you do, and a love that's in the work you do. And that never leaves. I suppose that's one of the key things for me. If it leaves me, I think I'll have to switch my role and find something else. But all of them have the same, like even from like I would have followed NFL, lacrosse, I would have looked at different sports, different coaches. I would have looked to the States a lot, to Canada a lot, for different kind of, I suppose, tools. And that's where I kind of find that I've learned a huge amount, and I'm able to, I suppose, because I look globally more so than just looking at Ireland. That's where I've learned an awful lot. And one of the things, and you mentioned it there, Pádraig, demographics of the GAA ranges from 4 years old up to nearly 104. And I suppose that's one of the hardest things for me, is that the younger generation come up, know what lesbian, gay, different nationalities. They don't see race, they don't see color, they don't see someone from a different nationality. If you're going to school every day with these children, they're your friends, and they don't see that. It's when we become adults that a lot of that comes through. So there is a generation of Irish people in the GAA who weren't allowed to be gay and weren't allowed to be to mix with different nationalities. So it is also being aware of our history. And I would be, I suppose history was one of my favorite subjects at school. So I'm very aware of what our history is. So that's what, when I do my work, I'm conscious of that as well. And I think that's part of understanding people, is you have to know where they're coming from as well. And that's what I tried to do in the GAA. And I think that my experience, along with tools I have now from the work I've done, will help me push diversity and inclusion through the GAA and through the clubs. But also, clubs help me as well. Like, I could ring up your club, Pádraig, and say, listen, Pádraig, what are you doing in this area? That's one thing I will say about the GAA, and it's why I love it so much, is it's always been a community. It's always been my support when I moved from Ireland to America, when I moved from America back to Ireland, when I moved to Dublin. First thing I did was sign up for the GAA club. So it's always been my support. So in some ways, I'm repaying back a lot of the support I got from the community. It's a different society now. And that's where we have to be conscious of educating people, making people aware about different what's going on in society, and also education means that you can accomplish anything. So I think they're the two areas I focus a lot of my time on.
Nice, they're excellent places to hang out.
I know. You don't have time for very much anything else if you're educating yourself.
So on that, I have two more questions.
Yeah.
I won't necessarily go mad into the coaches that you've had in the past and stuff, but if you were to choose one coach that you really like at the moment, so like if you were to pick anybody in the world, and even if it's somebody you bypassed in the last couple of weeks and you're like, geez, that person now is going to be kind of interesting, I'm going to start keeping an eye on their stuff, or they've just said a couple of things that you're like, do you know what, they are actual game changers, like, is there anybody, who's your favorite coach right now?
I wouldn't say I have a favorite. You know, I went to the coaching conference, and Chris van der I heard his talk, first of all, at the coaching conference, but I also, he presented at the I Coach Kids.
Yeah.
And his whole philosophy on developing, and like, I thought that was a new thing, I suppose, for me. I reached that when I was with Dublin under 14's team. It was all about development. And then when I seen him and he started it 14 years ago, I went, God, I wish I had seen that 14 years ago.
Nice.
You know? So I think every couple of weeks I find somebody or something, or I've gone to where a coach has really... some of the times it's not rocket science, like it's something that they've gone back to human nature and they've gone back to the basics. And that's one of the things I would say, is that I suppose one of the coaches who had probably the biggest influence on my life would have been Mike Boyle and Barry Zolan, and only because I've seen how well they developed strength and conditioning, and how much, I suppose, I went to Mike Boyle's coaching conference here many years ago, and see what Barry and a group of Irish SNC coaches were doing was amazing to see, because there was no jobs here in Ireland. You wouldn't have got a job, like maybe in the UK, but they started off a new wave of really talented Irish SSCs, and I've just seen that develop. So I actually go back and look at some of my colleagues and some of the people who were in school with me and college with me, and they've developed into amazing coaches as well. So I think through a lot of the stuff, there's a lot of coaches who inspire me all the time. So it depends, like that on Twitter or on Facebook. There's always something new coming out. But I have a tendency to follow a few that I've kind of made a mark, or I'd always touch back base with Mike Boyle and see what he's doing.
Cool. So second last question. Do you have a particularly favourite athlete?
Particularly favourite athlete. There's a few. Probably in the GAA, and it's actually only because I used to see him train, and is Johnny Cooper. At DCU, when I used to drop my daughter off to Dublin train, and Johnny Cooper used to be out by himself doing all his training and all his to see the commitment, the training, and I know they say about there's a few other players as well that do the same, but I've seen him a couple of times, I've met him a couple of times, and just his whole demeanor and how he holds himself and different things like that. Probably I would have to say the Williams sisters in tennis, because of they're constantly coming back to look for titles. It's amazing that competition, I suppose. I see that sometimes in myself. It's hard to know. I think I liked a long time ago, I had a huge fascination with Michael Phelps, the swimmer, just because of his body, as in his hand span, leg span. I remember doing a paper on that, and just how he, I suppose, that talent identification of athletes to the sport, yeah, is what came to the forefront with that, with him becoming one of the best swimmers in the world. So I think that talent identification, I bring it back to myself. I wonder what sport I should have on with if there was talent identification. Yeah. Come back. Yeah. I was like, if you're tall and strong, what would you in? Maybe it wouldn't have been GAA, maybe it would have been, yeah, something else. But it is that of how we look at, I suppose, athletes now. It's their body, their shape, their hands. It's all of that stuff, I suppose, that we've started to analyze more. There's probably a few more, but I can't think of them at the moment.
Okay, yeah. Actually, just talking about Michael Phelps, like I don't know whether I'm similar to yourself enough, but whenever I look at an athlete or something like that, or I hear about a particular athlete, or I follow any of them, I always like to kind of dig a little bit more under the surface. So I'll kind of go into a little bit of a rabbit hole of like finding out, okay, what's their training like? What's their regimes like? Where do they come from? What kind of multi-sports do they play and stuff? And I remember distinctly reading, I know Michael Phelps like had different issues and stuff like that, but I remember distinctly reading about him. He was supposed to be going, his friends were on about getting him to go to a nightclub in New York or something like this. And he seemingly went to the nightclub for about 20 minutes or something like that. And he left and he asked his driver to bring him to a swimming pool. This is 2:00 in the morning. So he just had like this and like you mentioned about the Williams sisters, like to come back that often, there needs to be that, an insane level of hunger and I suppose insatiable awareness of like, okay, this is what we are and this is what we just require to stay happy and alive. Like, and I think that's one of the interesting things when it comes to athletes. Like there's a lot of athletes that adore their sport, but there's a lot of athletes that adore the friends that they make from the sport. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
I think
that I do remember that as well. From maybe that was one of the earlier talks, and when I did my sports science degree, was one of the earlier talks was with the rugby manager Eddie Sullivan, and he had started to say to the players, you need to start looking at your careers as well as the sport, because you have only a limited time span in being a professional rugby player or even playing for Ireland. So they had started like education things, career things. And I just remember going, yeah, our identity is usually an athlete or a professional sports person or this, whereas to actually focus on that and also have the second part, which is who you are. Like, I suppose my identity for many years was captain of the Groen Wales, captain of this. So once that transition is quite difficult when you've gone away from it, you kind of go, oh my God, who am I now? You know? So there is those down times where you're going, jeepers, I have to reinvent the wheel, or I have to pick up another sport. And I suppose being on the west coast of Connemara, I never learned how to swim. So 3 years or so, I went back to learn how to swim, and that's where I spent a lot of time going through Michael Phelps' books and just him as an athlete and all of that. And I really wanted to learn. I spent weeks on YouTube watching techniques and everything, and then when I got into the water, and I absolutely adore the sport now. And that's one of the things that people need to realize, is you can take up a sport at any time in your life. And I suppose I hadn't seen my career ended in GAA when I did my cruciate ligament about 7 years ago. But one of the things I wanted to do was play with my daughter in GAA. So both of us play senior for Round Towers in 2 games, and in my second game I did my cruciate and I went into retirement pretty much. But
you got to play with her.
I did. I got to play 2 games with her. So it was very, very emotional. And that second one when my cruciate just tore. But and the thing is about it, my thesis report was on cruciate injuries in the GAA. So I knew exactly what I had done. So it was a grueling 6 weeks and operation and everything. But like as I said, you come back from it and you have those scars, first of all, but you also pick up a different sport, and mine was swimming. And I think that's one of the things, is that you have to realize your body, it can adapt as well as your mind adapt, and you can pick any sport at any age in your life. You can pick a sport, and that's one of the things I have started to spend more time in gyms. I know growing up I didn't, but spent more time now in gyms in Dublin, and like the caliber, I suppose I was fitter than I ever was in my life when I moved to Dublin, because of the gyms and because of what I was doing. So there is huge pluses to staying fit and staying healthy and having that environment, the friendship, especially when the team sport is gone. Yeah. And you go to an individual sport, the gym is where you come back into a team again. So yeah, that environment of the gym creates team again for me. So I look at it differently. Before it was kind of I needed to train outdoors all the time because I couldn't handle the stuffiness, but now it's become the team. So it's looking, your different perspective is good. But yeah, no, I'm enjoying it now. So but yeah, it's forward.
No, I think that's huge. So I suppose, and this is my final one. So what's obviously you're quite busy with your role in the GAA at the moment and keeping all of the different connections over the years with lots of different associations and people and clubs and stuff like that. What's your kind of next step? What are you, other than swimming, what are you kind of playing with at the moment? that's your next coaching step nearly, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think realistically on the coaching side of things, I as I said, I stepped back away from some of the teams that I was coaching at county level, just to have a break away from it and retrain and relearn. So I've actually started to look at different kind of training courses online, and like what I remember going back to the sports science, the difference in the training courses when I was 18 to the difference when I was 31. like there was a huge gap and everything had changed. Exercises to do what you do in strength and stretches and all of that had changed as well. So I think that's one of the things that I'd like to do is get back into a good training course and retrain in some of the new techniques. The stats analysis was something I did love as well. I haven't done it in about 7 years, so I'd like to see how that has progressed in since I did we used to do an awful lot of stats on DA games and other sports and soccer games and stuff. So we used to I'd like to see how this kind of stats analysis has changed. And I think that's probably enough, to be honest. But I do think I would go back to being a coach, but I don't know at what level. I think you need to spend a lot of time immersed, and it takes over your whole life if I went back to managing a team and all of that again. What I found 2 or 3 years ago, Thomas Davis, a couple of PA clubs in Dublin, after I did a thing on TG Carr for Barrow Canada, we did a lot of kind of light testing and speed testing and endurance testing. One of the things I found was I liked being part of that. I liked the whole setup of it, of training other people and passing on the knowledge. So something like that, where you can share the knowledge with other people, would be something that I'd really like to do. But also, as well as that, just keep in there with what's happening in coaching and where people are going and where coaching is in Ireland as well as internationally.
I think that's fantastic. I think that, like, in your kind of role, it's hugely important to have that grounding in what you love, which is, I suppose, you have a lot of talents, so you have a lot of experience with those talents in lots of various settings. So it's hugely helpful for lots of other people to know that someone like yourself, who's at the pinnacle now, at the very top when it comes to the decision making and how things can be impacted and how you can influence progress, that can be hugely helpful for sports scientists, for everybody, because that cohesiveness, I think, makes a huge difference. I think even something simple like the diversity, if we'd say, for example, in training teams, like, yes, the amount of different methodologies, yeah, like, it's mad at the minute. But like, it comes back to very much like you mentioned at the start, like, if you're not doing some kind of tumbling or some kind of crawling activity with any kind of a ground-based sport, I just think you're lunatic. Like, you just, like, it's mad. Like, that if you're doing all this other mad testing and all this kind of crazy stuff, it's fine, but like, you have to analyze where your people are at and your players are at and what their capabilities are and what the demands of the game are. And it's, yeah, it's so important to have such a wealth of experience as well as such a forward-thinking mentality towards helping people and being able to mentor them correctly, but also having that hunger and the curiosity. I read something the other day that a curious coach is a really good coach. And that's essentially what we are. Like, it's just the insatiable curiosity. I think that's why we do why we're coaches, you know, or why we're into this in general.
Yeah. I think one of the things I found from the iCoach Kids kind of phenomenon that's happening, I suppose, in the moment with Sport Ireland and Coaching Ireland, I would have worked for Coaching Ireland a little bit as well. So a lot of what's happening there, the phenomenon is that trying to get all the countries to link into coaching and have a good structure on it and have fundamentals right, because getting a child to balance and then getting a 50-year-old to balance and then getting 30-year-old to balance, very simple core things. I think once that's in the game, and I've seen a lot of coaches at high performance level going, what did they do with the basics? Why didn't they have the basics right? Why they come into me 20 years later and they don't know how to engage their core? So I think the best advice I would be given to any coach is learn the muscles of the body, learn the body off by heart, learn what muscles you need to engage at what time, find out where all the connections are, spend a lot of time on you personally, because your body can show you an awful lot. But also, as well as that, is that if you get the basics right, you can teach anybody anything if you can get the fundamentals right. And that's what I learned from the iCoach Kids. But I do think there is a standard in Ireland that we, because I've been to Poland and I've been to Italy and different places coaching, the standard we do have in Ireland is a very, very high caliber. And that's one thing I have shared with a lot of people, is that we do have a really, really good high standard of how we coach and how we train people and our structures. And maybe that's why the organization, even my organization and planning, is so structured, because of who taught me. And I think that's one of the key things. But it's to share that knowledge then to other countries, because they don't have that knowledge yet, and always looking for advice and always looking. I'll give you a simple story. At the last, just at Christmas time, I was in Italy designing a disability toolkit for coaches, and there was 8 of us, and there was 3 from Ireland, but then Latvia, Russia, Germany, Italy, and Hungary. And that whole development and how we engage with each other and what we develop, it's mainly for children with disabilities or intellectual disability, but it will be a live toolkit for coaches to use. But the first thing was the communication, but getting the basics right between a game level, what a target game is, what a field game is, what the demands of a game is, to basic coordination. So I think if you go back to games as well, as how you develop a game, but how you make it fun, how you enjoy it, how, like, you, if you put your passion and fun and love of the sport into anything you teach, people come out loving the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And I think that's one of the key kind of things, is we as humans love games, even if they're very simple games or not. But like, that's all sport is just games, and it's just us essentially just puzzles and problem solving and fixing puzzles, and we love them from being children. So why not continually have that mentality of, it's just a puzzle that we need to solve, and probably the most complicated puzzle of all is ourselves. So it's a challenging one, but we have enough to be doing with ourselves. We can sort ourselves out, never mind anybody else. But I think that that's a huge thing, is that I think the more we become conscious that we have huge ability as coaches to set the tone of exactly the methodologies we use, the attitudes we bring to teams or groups or people. We're the energy source a lot of the time. And if not, we can. There's no harm in us being the energy source, because we can do a lot of good help, I think, to kind of spur people on. And I think athletes a lot of the time, and people will have good self drive, but we can help definitely be the spark, and I think people like yourself have been a fantastic spark for a lot of people, I'm sure, no doubt.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was told many, many years ago, was I'd never see, probably 20 years, 30 years time is when I'd see the production of a lot of my coaching. And I can't wait to see those 14-year-old girls turn when they're 24, when I meet them somewhere, or, you know what I mean? Like, they're the kind of, well, if they come up and say hello to me, I've done a good job.
But that's exactly it. That's exactly it. If they say hello, exactly, like, it's a huge, huge thing. Like, that's one of the key ones.
If they still like me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Yeah, it's a huge one. Ger, I'm gonna leave you in peace now, and to enjoy your day. You've been it's been fantastic chatting to you, and I really, really appreciate you giving some time to chat to me.
Where I'll be able to drop in and take a visit to the gym the next time I'm down.
Absolutely, yeah. I'd love to get you a coffee and pick your brain, because it would be definitely one I'd. You're kind of one of those coaches where I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna have to catch up with her a bit more now and kind of learn more from her. So it's good.
That's good.
If people wanted to get in touch with you, where would they get in touch with you, or how could they get you as to potentially helping them with any kind of club development or coaching or anything like that, or
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so my email is geraldine.mctavish@ga.ie. I'm on Twitter at Gera McTavish. I'm on Facebook as Gera McTavish. And I'm on Instagram as Gera McTavish as well. But yeah, my email, and then I give out my work number, which is 01819-2363. So that's 01819-2363.
Super stuff. So that's fantastic, Ger. And I'm sure we'll try and get people onto you and kind of get some more help going for the closing stuff. But for the moment, I'm gonna leave you to it. I want you to try and stay safe and stay sane as much as you can during this tough time. And just a final thanks again for joining me.
Yeah, Gramila Mad Park. Thanks a million. Really great appreciate stuff. It.
Okay, folks, so that was the Humble Coach Podcast, episode number 56 with Ger McTavish. So, a couple of things. First thing, I would like to say a massive thank you to Ger for joining me on today's show. She's an extremely busy role as the GAA's Diversity and Inclusion Officer. And I want to say just again, a massive thank you to her for taking time out of her busy schedule to join us and give us lots and lots of food for thought, I think. If you enjoyed today's show or you think anybody else would benefit from it, please feel free to share it and even subscribe to the channel if you enjoy these podcasts. And if you want to check out any of the other podcasts on or any of the other episodes on the Humble Coach Podcast, you can check us out on podbean.com, which is our home base, or on Spotify or iTunes, etc. Pretty much anywhere you get your podcasts, we'll be there. So a final thank you, folks, to everybody who has subscribed already and has taken the time to listen in. And hopefully you got a lot of good food for thought and lots of interesting ideas that you can apply to your coaching and to your life in general. And I want to say just a massive thank you to everybody for tuning in. Hope you guys are all staying safe, and hope you all have a fantastic day. Take care.